Welcome to Parents Perspective.
I once worked with a very loving, tolerant set of parents who were being driven nuts by their children's arguing. These children were absolutely devoted to turning the dinner hour into an exercise in conflict. He's eating all the potatoes. She's kicking my chair. Stop looking at me. You stop breathing on me. I met with the family and told them I was going to use a simple trick to see if it would help make dinner more pleasant. I said that every night, like waiters, the children would have to serve dinner to each other. For example, the oldest would serve dinner to the youngest, who in turn would have to serve the middle child, who in turn would have to serve the oldest. They would have to rotate the pattern nightly so that they would not be serving the same person each night. At first, the kids got a manic grin on their faces and told me they were absolutely feasting on the fantasy of just how horrible and sloppy they could make their sibling's plate look. Then it went in the other direction, as it became evident that their siblings might do an equally bad job on their plate. But Joey's too little to know how to serve a plate, the sister said. That's okay, I said. He'll learn. But he's going to make all my food touch each other, she said. I don't like it when my food touches. Well, if you do right by Joey, I'm sure he will do right by you, I assured her.
We have just heard an excerpt from Dr. Riley's Box of Tricks, read by the author. From a parent's perspective, how can we best cope with our kids' misbehavior? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is an expert we both truly wish we had known while our kids were young. Dr. Douglas Riley is a licensed clinical psychologist with more than 30 years of experience working with children, adolescents, and parents. In addition to Dr. Riley's Box of Tricks, he's also the author of The Defiant Child, The Depressed Child, and What Your Explosive Child is Trying to Tell You. He lives in Newport News, Virginia, with his wife and two sons, 24 and 26 years old. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Riley.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
What would you say is the most important ingredient in your box of tricks for parents?
Beyond a doubt, the most important ingredient is keep it light, use your humor, keep it funny.
Here's a question. How can we summon up humor when we're so frustrated and annoyed by a child's behavior, stuff that goes on over and over, and we think, they have got our number, they know they're pushing all our buttons, and how do we keep from strangling the kid?
It takes a lot of practice, for sure. One of the things that we all have to remember about kids is that they have kid brains, not adult brains. There's a lot of interesting neuroscience about this. We know today that our brains don't go into their final stage of wiring until we're around 26.
And some would say even later,
Some would say even later. And most of the parents laugh when I explain to them that their teenager's brain is a faulty device.
they already know, right?
They already know. Teenagers don't want to hear that, of course. But certainly we have to have the mindset that we cannot take what our kids do personally. They're kids, and they're going to make all kind of glitches. Where I live, I work with a huge number of military folks, and I am so indebted to them and so proud of everything that they're doing, and we wish them all the best as part of this.
As a parent and as a psychologist, what behaviors would you say are especially susceptible to being cured by your selection of tricks?
The thing I think it really works the best on are the bad habits that children have developed over years. One of the first things I talk about in the book is a young man who was really large, who loved to yell at his mom. He was 14, but he was as big as me, and I'm a tad over 6 feet and weigh about 210. He was my size by the time he was 14, and he had taken to yelling at his mom, and he had been doing it a long time. And we tried some of the typical kind of stuff, the taking away privileges, a little bit of grounding, things like that. Might as well have been pitching a pebble at an elephant, literally in this case. He continued to yell, so his mom said to me, we got to come up with something else. So what I came up with that was we sat him down and explained to him that since he believed that yelling at his mother was the proper way to communicate with her, he would have to yell anything he wanted her to hear. Now, again, if you can imagine what dinner might have been like, he's saying, pass the salt, please, and His mom doesn't look up and says, "Mom, pass the salt, please." Mom's still not looking up. And then it has to go to, "Mom, pass the salt, please." His mom said that after about 2 days of having him do a fair amount of that, he knocked off the yelling. And if he would begin to start the yelling again, she would ask him, "Do you think this is the proper way to communicate with me?" So it works really well with those kind of habits. You know, it works well with other things too, like kids ignoring parents. It works well with kids leaving their rooms like a tornado had hit them, or leaving the house really messy. Just a wide range of things.
Can you give some examples? Because your book is terrific about some of that stuff. Maybe our listeners would like to hear what you told parents about the messy room, for example.
Yes, that's actually one of my favorite tricks in there. In the book, I give all the tricks names, and one of them is named the family laundry hamper. I tell the story in that one about a girl I worked with. I refer to her as a surfer girl. She was, she had the bleached blonde hair. She wore the hemp necklaces and things. Really a nice kid, but she left her room as if a marauding band of monkeys had, decamped there and, messed it up for a couple of days. And her parents, again, had tried everything. Dad and mom were almost ready to throw their hands up. The dad finally said, "Well, it's her room. Let her keep it any way she wants." The mom said, "Nope, if she's going to live in my house, she's going to live like a human being." So if you had looked at a room, and actually the parents showed me some photographs that they'd taken on their cell phone. I mean, there were layers of clothes on the floor. They joked that the child didn't know what kind of flooring she actually had, hardwood, carpet. She hadn't seen the floor in so long. So we sat her down and explained to her that we thought it was wonderful that she had volunteered to use her room as a laundry hamper. And now we were going to ask the rest of the family to use her room as the laundry hamper, too. Everybody would be allowed to throw their dirty clothes in there. Well, of course, being a good, little bit oppositional 14-year-old, her first response was, "Whatever." And then she said she didn't care. Go ahead. She lasted about 3 days. Her dad was huge. He worked on the docks in the shipyard down in Newport News. So when he would come home, his clothes were a little bit odoriferous. So he would toss his shirt and his jeans in there. Her little brother would throw in his jeans, his shirts, his dirty socks. Worked pretty well.
And it was a permanent cure? That was it?
Well, again, it was one of these things where we continued to meet with the family, and they told me that when the girl's room would start to get a little bit messy again, they would have to ask her again, "Do we need to go back to using your room as a laundry hamper?" So it wasn't a perfect cure, but they told me it was 90% cured, something like that.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on Dr. Riley's Box of Tricks.
The popular book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Douglas Riley about some tricks of the trade for parents. What do you think causes the types of exasperating behaviors that you highlight in your book, so much of what we find in our own families?
Well, I've spent a lot of time wondering how things have gotten this way, because the sort of things that parents will talk to me in my office about are things like kids trashing the house, not doing homework, arguing incessantly with the parents, lying about everything. And I usually say to the parents, "Were you allowed to get away with something like that when you were a kid?" And they all say, "No way." And yet their kids are doing it, and often doing a lot of it. So I think what's happened is most of us had our feet held to the fire, so to speak, when we were kids, about if you get too far out of line, life got real unhappy real fast. I think we've overcompensated. What we do now is, instead of providing any real consequences with kids, we talk. We have become a talk-oriented culture. We are no longer a farming culture. We're hardly even a mechanical culture anymore. We're an information-based culture. So all of us use the skill that we have the most well-developed, which is our talk. So we talk our kids to death, and then we punish them with painless interventions like 10 minutes of time out. Now, again, if you think about it, how is that going to deter a kid from taking you on? Because they tend to see us as toothless tigers.
So
it's kind of scary.
So what would you say if there's a behavior that's really annoying? How should parents focus?
Well, there's certainly nothing wrong with using talk to begin with. In fact, part of the reason I developed the tricks is to, in a sense, shock a child or a teenager into thinking, okay, I better change this. One of the important things about using tricks is that every trick has to have an out. When you sit down with a child and you tell them what you're considering using because of their behavior or their bad habits, you always give them an out. It's an absolute necessity. You say to them what you want them to change, and then you say, and if that behavior changes, we won't have to use these tricks. But you have to let them know that if they don't change their behavior, you're going to go ahead and move forward with it. So we have to let our kids know that we're not bluffing. I think we have to let our kids know from an early age that we're going to listen to them, we're going to love them, we're going to nurture them, but we're not going to negotiate with them, and we're not going to bargain with them. And again, I see a culture these days that does negotiating and bargaining over and over and over.
So the old standby of because I'm the mommy or because I'm the daddy is okay to say?
I say that so often in my office, it's not funny. With my own kids, I've got fabulous sons, two sons, and they're like any other kids in that they love to take me on. They love to take their mom on at times. And sometimes I would look at them and go, excuse me, I'm the what and you're the what. Okay, Dad, I get your point. I'm the kid. You're the parent. And I'd say, are those two things equal? No, Dad.
It's terrific. We don't have to have democracies then.
No democracies.
Because the behaviors you highlight are so common and so annoying, are there any ways you can suggest that we might employ preventive measures to keep them from occurring in the first place?
Well, you know, it kind of goes back to some of what we just discussed. From an early age, we've got to let them know that we're not going to negotiate with them. And again, that doesn't have to be heard in a harsh way. I think we can be very nurturing, very loving, very tender with our kids, and at the same time let them know, I'm the parent, you're the child, we're not here to bargain, this is what I need you to do. And, you know, you give a child a reasonable amount of time to do things. You set regular kind of standards for them. You don't make your standards too perfectionistic or anything like that. But you let them know that you set the standards in the family as the parent, and they have to go along, and that's part of their job. And, of course, I don't have anything at all against making them amazingly happy as long as they're going along with everything. I'm a big, big believer in kids having fun and being rewarded for being successful.
How were you convinced that the techniques you advocate would work with most kids in terms of like long-term success and, you know, this is sort of garden variety, you can employ it pretty much?
That's certainly an interesting kind of question. I know in the psychology world, a lot of people like to do big experiments and things like that. I work in an office all day long. I don't work at a university, don't have a laboratory. So my standards are what the moms tell me. Look, one of the things I'm proudest of about this book is it's passed the sister-in-law test. I have a sister-in-law who lives outside of Mobile who is amazingly bright and very, very skeptical sort of person about psychological books and theories and stuff like that. She has read everything. She has this piercing sort of intellect about her. And she tells me these books work marvelously well on her five kids. There's another part of it, too. This is what's funny about this book. The kids that I see often sit in my waiting room reading this book and laughing about it.
Oh, my.
Yeah. It's funny. I'll go out in the waiting room quite often. I'll hear somebody out there giggling, and they're reading the book. Because, I mean, it is so unconventional and so different than anything else out there. But the kids will often tell me that the tricks are unforgettable. There was a brother and a sister years ago who fought like cats and dogs. And we explained to them that the reason they fought so much was because they had failed to spend enough time together. That's the name of the trick, the failure to spend enough time together. And so what I explained to them was we were going to rectify that situation. We were going to give them an entire Saturday morning from 8 until noon in a room together into which they could take books, paper and pencil. Nothing electronic, no toys. They could read, they could write, they could draw. Now, these were kids who were, I believe, around 8 and 10 at the time. The brother was 10, the sister was 8. Here's the rules for that failure to spend enough time together trick. You're in there for 4 hours. However, if your mom hears you in there making a ruckus or arguing too much, you're taken out of the room together and you're put in your own bedroom for a half-hour timeout. After that, you go back into the room together. However, now instead of getting out at 12, it's going to be 12:30. If you start arguing and fighting again, they take you back out. You get another half-hour timeout. After that, you go back into the room together again, and now it's going to be 1 o'clock until you get out. I asked the brother and sister what they thought about it once they told me their mom had actually gone ahead and used that, and they both said it was something they would never forget. And then, and then months down the road, the mom told me that if they would start to fight, all she had to do was look at them and say, "Have you guys spent enough time together lately?" And they'd knock it off.
Isn't that interesting?
What's the reason for not permitting any toys? I can understand no electronics, but toys, a game that they would play together, why not?
Well, I want it to be boring.
Oh.
I don't want them to have fun when they do this. I want it to be unforgettable in a way that makes them think, do I want to get along with my sibling better, or do I want to spend a very, very boring Saturday?
Oh, that's interesting.
I know that I read, maybe it was in the book, that you and your wife discussed many of these ideas, and I just wondered what that was like. Apparently, you agreed to do these tricks.
My wife and I have been talking about this for years. I mean, in reality, Deborah is the co-author of this book. She has had amazing input into it. And I make a joke in the book about how my sons were sort of the laboratory for a lot of these tricks. You'd have to know my sons. My sons have grown into young men with wicked sense of humor who really like people, and they both have a piercing kind of wit and insight into their own behavior and other people's behavior too. So they kind of served as my proving ground.
Serves them right for being yours, right?
If you had to do any of this over again, would there be anything that you would do differently with some of these tricks?
Well, at this point, the ones that are in the book represent what I think are about the best of 30 years. We started with probably 110 or 15, something like that. I mean, at one point, the title of the book, the subtitle was going to be something like 101 Uncommon Solutions, but we called them down. My wife and I went over them with a fine-tooth comb. We tried to find the ones that really didn't ring funny, the ones that maybe really would fall flat on their face. So I think we came up with 80 that will work pretty well. So I'm pretty optimistic about these being pretty workable.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on Dr. Riley's Box of Tricks. Parents' Perspective needs you, your feedback, your opinions, and not least, your donations that help with the cost of producing this award-winning program.
Visit us online at www.parentsperspective.org and click on to Give Direct, I Give, or eBay at Mission Fish. Please help us continue to help you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Douglas Riley about some tricks of the trade for parents.
Was there any surprise in all this, in your years of trying all this stuff? Did you have any surprises that things came out a little differently than you had expected?
Well, the biggest surprise has been hearing the people sit in the waiting room laughing and giggling while they're reading the book. And it's funny, people get their hands on the book and they say pretty quickly, "Do you sell these here?" And we have a few that we do. Typically it's, through commercial outlets. But so that's been a nice surprise. But again, the biggest surprise has been kids reading the book and pointing out which tricks they think are the funniest, and then pulling me to the side and saying,
"Don't tell my parents."
Well, that, but also, I don't want mom using this on me, but I want her using it on my sister. So that's happened any number of times.
So I think what's especially interesting is there are no secrets. It's not, I mean, the fact that the children in the waiting room are reading the book, they know what they're in for.
They know exactly what they're in for. I think part of the beauty of the process is that I will describe the tricks to them in great detail when we're back in my office. Like, you know, for example, there was one young man that was just notoriously sloppy. He would sneak into the pantry. He would get candy bars and, you know, granola bars and things like that, and would just leave the wrappers on the floor. And so we began to explain certain tricks to him because he claimed that he was not the one leaving the wrappers on the floor. And there was only him, mom, and dad in the family. So we explained to him that, well, it must be the aliens. at night, the aliens are sneaking down and raiding your pantry and having a little party. And, of course, when they hear anybody moving, they beam up. And that's why they leave the wrappers all over the floor. So we told him he would have to go on what's called alien watch. That meant 1 hour every night, he would have to sit very still in the chair out near the pantry so that when the alien came down and materialized, he could jump out of his chair and grab him. But I said to him, you know, if somehow almost miraculously there are no more wrappers on the floor and the trash is, you know, no longer all over the place, we won't have to do this trick. Well, again, he chose to stop the behavior rather than having to go through alien watch. So the funny thing about him was he loved the trick. When I describe these tricks to kids, they laugh, they roll their eyes, they see the humor in it. It is so much different than a conventional therapy session where you sit and you talk to a child about timeout or loss of privileges or taking away or docking the allowance or, you know, losing the favorite clothing and things like that. These tricks seem to engage the child's imagination in a funny way, but it also helps them decide, yeah, I better change.
What's the biggest trick in the box, Dr. Riley?
Well, thank you for asking that. This is certainly, I think, my favorite, and I think probably the most important thing for all of us to remember as parents. At the end of the book, I talk about the biggest trick in the box, and I say, go look at the mirror and look at those two things protruding off the side of your head. They're not radiators, you know, like with rabbits. Those things are to be used for listening. And I find that if we will simply spend a lot of time one-on-one with our kids, not doing anything else. When I say one-on-one, if I'm talking about boys' night out and girls' night out, I'm not talking about on the way to do other errands. I'm talking about time specifically devoted to them. And we need to give a child at least an hour a week of that, where we sit and we listen with absolute fascination to their hopes, their dreams, what they want to be, who they're hanging out with, what music they're listening to, what movies they want to see, anything that they want to just babble on about. If we let them be the center of our universe there for a while, it is remarkable how we won't have to use any tricks at all because they're going to feel soothed at the deepest level.
And it's so encouraging. I'm so happy to be exposed to this book. Wish I had known it many years ago, and you as well. In addition to your book, Dr. Riley's Box of Tricks, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue further some of the issues we've been discussing?
Well, the Box of Tricks is certainly a different book. And to be honest with you, I'm not really aware of anything similar out there. The things that I still tend to like that have been around a long time are the book 1-2-3 Magic by Thomas Phelan. One of the things I love about Phelan is he has a sense of humor about kids. I mean, invariably, the people that I like to read and that I like to recommend to the parents that I work with are going to be other writers who have a sense of humor. And Phelan does. 1-2-3 Magic's a very easy book to use, and it'll make you laugh as you read that also. The other book that I think is really good, particularly for parents who have a Christian perspective, is The Strong-Willed Child by Dr. James Dobson. Then I have a good friend down in Texas, Dr. Jim Sutton. He has a website called docspeak.com and has written a marvelous new book about child behavior change. He specializes primarily in what happens in the classroom. I've asked people if they read the book and like the book and get inventive themselves with their own tricks, I want them to get to my website. That's drdouglasriley.com. I'd like them to go to the website and send in their trick, because hopefully a couple of years down the road, we'll be publishing another edition of this. And I would love to publish a whole book of parent tricks. And I promise parents in the book, I will give them credit for the trick. They'll get their name in the book. They'll get full credit for it. So I think that would be just absolute fun.
So well, do we.
This has absolutely been fun, and it's a shame we can't talk more, but we certainly appreciate your being here. So, Dr. Douglas Riley, thank you for helping us to learn some more tricks of the trade with our children.
It's absolutely been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The best way to get in touch with Parents Perspective is to email us at parentspr@gmail.com. Our first listener will receive an autographed copy of Dr. Riley's Box of Tricks, 80 Uncommon Solutions for Everyday Parenting Problems. Just email us at parentspr@gmail.com. Give us your name and snail mail address and mention show number 493. Tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice, or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Joseph and Anna Smith Foundation. Parents Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, and the show is made possible by your financial support. Thank you for your contributions. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay. Or you can send checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Our sound engineer is Kent Hitchcock. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.